Your name?
Jenny Reed.
Jenny Reed, you've just completed a report, Who is Low Income in D.C.? I wanted to read the first couple sentences and just have you go from there. From your report, quote, "The District of Columbia's poverty rate is far above the national average and has remained high even in periods of strong economic growth. Some 133,000 residents, nearly one quarter of the population, are low income, with income at or below $24,475 a year for a family of three. D.C.'s low-income population is so large that it would overflow RFK Stadium and the Nationals ballpark combined," end quote. These are striking facts, disturbing look into what's really taking place in the District of Columbia. Talk about this report. Who is low-income in D.C., Jenny Reed?
Well, I think one of the things that we found that people may be surprised at is the majority of low-income residents are living in working families. But, and a lot of them are living in families that are working full-time. But the main reason that so many of them are working but remain low-income is because they're in really low-wage paying jobs. We found that the median wage for low-income D.C. residents is $9.14 an hour. And that's just not enough to lift a family of three above 1.5 times the poverty level. And a lot of these families are also in part-time jobs, not necessarily by their choice. There's a limited availability of year-round full-time work for a lot of low-income residents. And these are people that we encounter every day. These are janitors. These are cashiers. These are people working in retail or reception desks. There's a prevalence of low-wage work in the district, and it just means that for a lot of people, even though they're working, it's not enough to move their family towards economic security. Our research also showed that the city should think about targeting its workforce development dollars towards jobs that are paying higher wages, such as $12 or $15 an hour, and that provide full-time year-round work. Our research showed that this could help move 80% of residents in low-income families towards economic security above 150% of the poverty line. And it's not a totally unrealistic goal because there are a lot of jobs in D.C. that already pay this kind of wage that require some sort of specialized training, but not necessarily a four-year degree. And it would be D.C.'s living wage actually pays just over $12.10 an hour, and that's a wage that's supposed to be paid to individuals working on projects that receive government subsidies. But we also found that for a significant number of low-income residents, they may be in families where work options may be limited. We found that one-third of low-income residents live in a family that's headed by someone who's elderly or who has a disability or both. And these residents may have limited ability to work, so any remedies to improve their economic security need to take into account programs and policies geared towards people who cannot work or people who may have great difficulty finding work. And we also found that a significant number of low-income residents live in single-parent families. Everything is harder for a single parent. They have a lot of demands to balance both working and caring for their kids. And the district could do things to make it easier for them to be available for work, such as making sure there's enough child care, especially for infants and kids with disabilities here in D.C., but also making sure that single parents are getting help and training to be prepared for jobs that can support a family on just one salary.
And why do you use 150% of poverty as opposed to just 100% of poverty?
We decided to use 150% of poverty because it's widely recognized that the actual poverty line, the poverty threshold, is way too low even to support a minimal existence here in the district. For example, the poverty line in D.C. for a family of three is just $17,000. And using 150% of poverty allows us to recognize the fact that there's a higher cost of living here in D.C., but also still get a good picture of how many families are struggling to meet basic needs. You know, one of the biggest problems with the federal poverty measure is that it's the same here in D.C. as it is anywhere else in the country. So in D.C., you've got a really high cost of living, and then you've got you know, rural Iowa, where you don't have as high a cost of living, but the poverty line is the same no matter what. So using a little bit of a higher number just lets us sort of look at the reality of the fact that it costs so much more to live here in the district.
As I think about the banks, the big banks getting bailed out, and then I think about the situation you're describing of children living with a parent, grandparent who has a disability, with a mom who is trying to work as many hours but needs daycare. It seems like the bailout, if the government can be as generous towards those most in need as it has been towards the wealthiest, what are the kind of things that should take place?
Well, we think that investments that we're making in our workforce development area could be better targeted to help families prepare for living wage jobs. Right now, there's a lot of concern that many of these programs just aren't providing people with the skills that they need to take advantage of the jobs that the district's creating. And you can see evidence of that in the fact that our unemployment rate is still really, really high, but DC's actually adding jobs. So there's a mismatch of skills between the jobs that are being added and the DC residents that need those jobs. And our economy, the district's economy, is, you know, performing a little bit better. It's adding jobs. That's not happening in other places around the country. But these jobs aren't going to our DC residents that are unemployed because they don't have the skills in many instances. So we need to help them get the training that they need so they can take advantage of those jobs that are being created. That would go a long way. And they also need to be geared towards jobs that pay a little bit better. $9 an hour isn't going to support a family of three here in the district. And so we need to either help people in affording their basic needs through food and housing assistance so that if they are working in low-wage work, they can achieve greater economic security through that work, or we need to train them for jobs that pay more so that maybe they don't need to have as much assistance just to meet a basic standard of living here in the district.
And Jenny Reed, isn't it true that sometimes, while it's true that some jobs maybe the folks with skills aren't available, that sometimes they are available in D.C.? And in fact, the first source agreement would require that they be hired. But sometimes that, if you could describe what that first source agreement is, and that its state right now of pretty regularly being violated.
The first source agreement is for contracts that receive a district subsidy for projects, a lot of economic development projects that they're building. If they receive a certain level of subsidy from the district, they're supposed to 51% of new hires are supposed to be district residents. The DC auditor came out with a report not too long ago showing that that hasn't been happening. And there's been complaints from both the business side and the worker side that the businesses aren't doing their job, or the businesses are saying they can't find enough qualified DC workers. So the district should make sure that not only is it finding enough qualified DC workers, but if it can't, that it's helping people get the skills they need. And it's making sure that they have those residents lined up so when those jobs become available, they can put them right into those jobs right away and not make it so that the businesses, according to them, are having a very difficult time finding enough qualified residents.
A little earlier you mentioned a living wage, and this is actually in the DC law as to defining what it is. I think most people will be surprised that it's specifically laid out as to what exactly a living wage is. Can you talk about that?
Sure. DC's living wage is just over $12 an hour right now. It's about $12.10, and it is also for companies that receive, you know, subsidies from the district to build certain projects. They're supposed to pay anyone they contract with and anyone the contractor contracts with a living wage of at least $12.10 an hour. But the auditor also very recently came out with a report showing that in many instances people were not being paid the living wage, even though they were entitled to receive it. So there needs to be some better enforcement by the district to make sure that those businesses and contractors that are receiving DC subsidies are following through with the wages that they're supposed to pay workers.
One of your recommendations from your report, Who is Low Income in DC, is additional cash benefits that SSDI, Social Security Disability Income, and SSI, Social Security Income, are not paying folks enough. And when you factor in they might have kids or, you know, grandkids living with them. And you also talk about food stamps and TANF, Temporary Assistance for Needy Families, which serves 1 in 3 children in D.C.
Yeah, one of our recommendations, we saw that a significant number of people live in families headed by someone who's elderly or who has a disability. We also found that people with disabilities are very likely to be low income. 43% of people with a disability live below 150% of the poverty line. So we need to help them. We need to help them live above poverty. And one of the ways that we can do that is by providing additional cash benefits. As you mentioned, the SSI and SSDI payments are very low, and a lot of these residents are living on very low fixed income. So DC could provide an additional cash supplement to their federal benefit that would help meet their basic needs, or they could provide more housing or food stamp assistance to help them with housing and food costs, which can be very expensive. And then for TANF, one of our recommendations that came from the fact that so many low-income residents live in single-parent families, 44%, which is nearly half. And as you mentioned, the TANF program serves 1 out of 3 kids here in D.C., the large majority of which are in single-parent families. But right now, the TANF program, it's supposed to help people get into jobs by providing them some skills training. But right now, the program, first of all, isn't doing a great job at assessing participants' needs when they come in the door. So it's not doing a great job at assessing whether they need substance abuse services, domestic violence services, and then getting them in there. And it's also not doing a great job at training them for jobs that can support a family. It's getting them into a lot of really low-wage jobs, jobs that aren't necessarily a right fit, and not giving them the skills that a lot of these single parents need, the large majority of which are women, to get into jobs that will support their family on one salary. You know, in our research, we found that single parents earn the lowest median wage of any other family type in the district. And they have just one earner to support their family. So it's really critical that the single parents either get additional assistance through TANF or through housing and food assistance, or they get into jobs that pay more, because it's just really hard to support a family on a job that pays $9 an hour.
What is TANF approximately? How much a month?
The TANF benefit, I believe, is about $428, the maximum, $428 a month. It's about 35% of the poverty line.
And I remember speaking with you and Katie Kerstetter, who's formerly with DC Fiscal Policy Institute, and I was interested to learn that TANF is not tied to cost of living adjustments. So it used to be quite a lot higher in DC, but since it doesn't go up, its buying power is decreasing. And comparing that to Askia Mohammed, who hosts Spectrum Today, he got a question in to President Obama, and just before that, Obama said, you know, if I get extra money, you know, it's not going to stimulate the economy that much. If I want a flat screen TV, I buy it. But with people who are hurting the most, you know, mothers receiving TANF, that money stays really locally. So just as far as stimulating the economy, providing money to the people who are most likely, who are in need, so they use it most locally, is probably, financially, it makes the most sense.
There was actually a study done by Joseph Stiglitz and Peter Orszag, the former budget director for President Obama, and Joseph Stiglitz, who's a Nobel Prize-winning economist, that showed that in a recession, when states have to balance their budgets, they often have two choices. They can cut spending or they can raise revenue. that raising revenue, raising taxes on those who can most afford it was actually better for the economy than spending cuts. And the reason for that is what you alluded to, low-income families are more likely to spend dollar for dollar what they get in the local economy and right away. Higher-income families spend a lot of their income outside of state's borders, outside of the local economy, and they also tend to hold on to a lot of it. So you don't get a dollar for dollar spending. So when you're forced to either do cuts or tax increases, the least harmful effect on the economy is raising taxes on those who can most afford it.
You begin by talking about, and it's just shocking, that D.C.'s low-income population is so large that it would overflow RFK Stadium and the National Ballpark combined. You also talk about those who are living in extreme poverty. Quoting from your report, over 47,000 district residents, 9% of the total population, live in extreme poverty, with incomes at or below 50% of the poverty line. That equates to less than $8,229 for a family of three.
Yeah, unfortunately, we've seen that a lot of people are living in deep poverty in the district. And we find that they're very similar to the low-income population, but they are less likely than other low-income residents to have a disability. They're less likely to be elderly, and they're more likely to be singles without kids. And the reason for that is a lot of the benefits that go to the elderly, people with disabilities, or to families with kids tend to, you know, keep them at or above poverty, just slightly above poverty, but not above 150% of poverty. But many of singles without children aren't eligible for benefits, or if they are, they're really, really low. So unfortunately, you find that a lot of people are living in extreme poverty, which is just over $5,000 for a single non-elderly person. And I just don't know how you get by on that much money in the district. I don't know how you survive, because that's not enough. And one of the things that we saw in the recession is a huge rise, actually, in the number of people living in deep poverty. At the end of 2009, actually 1 in 10 D.C. residents were living in deep poverty.
You had a panel discussion on the release of this report, and three individuals spoke, and they talked about making it without, on these kind of incomes, or not having an income. And they count on their families in the most extraordinary ways, extended families. But the pain, it made it from an academic issue to a very real one. The desperate need for jobs, and as you point out in this report, you know, $9 an hour is not going to cut it for $12, $15 an hour jobs. This is a desperate need.
Yeah, the panelists that we had talked about how difficult it was to, right now, to just keep looking for jobs. I mean, day after day, they're ready for a job, but they keep looking, they keep going places, and no one's hiring. So they're having to rely on an extended network of family and friends just to get by, and it really weighs down on them. A lot of them talked about how it's really difficult at the end of the day to keep going home and tell your family, I'm sorry, I still can't find a job, and how it weighs on them psychologically to, you know, keep looking and keep looking and not be able to find anything. And so I think that the district really needs to make an effort to look at where the jobs are going to be growing over the next decade. I mean, we know DC's adding jobs right now, so what fields are expected to grow? What do they pay? Let's look at how can we get people into those jobs, into those sectors that are growing, and into those jobs that are paying $12 to $15 an hour or even more, to help move a lot of our residents who are really struggling to make it day to day into a sustainable job.
Any final thoughts you want to share, Jenny Reed? And also, any comment about the district's financial situation right now? It's reported there's $175 million budget shortfall, and so the importance of increasing cash benefits and increasing availability of childcare, as your report points out, among other recommendations, becomes